This one, I've got one right here.
Check one. Does this work? Yeah, this one's working. Yeah. We're going to make you use microphones because a couple things. First of all, we want people to be able to hear. Secondly, we're being listened to in the nursery, and they said they'd come and wave if this didn't work. But we got a bunch of people in the nursery. So Carissa and Lois Manier are back with a bunch of kids. And we're also recording it, so if someone does want to get the chance to hear what's said, we're going to have a CD made, I believe. Bill's working on that. So don't be afraid of the microphone, and if anybody's really good, we'll put you on Alpha Praise Team. So thank you all for coming. There's more seats up front here. Some people just have to sit in the back row. thank you for coming, and this is really designed to be just a pleasant evening, a comfortable evening, you know, like just sitting around and talking, just getting a chance to get to know each other and for the Krauses to get to know us. So that's the spirit in which we're doing this, so please participate. That'll make it a much, much better evening. I want to open with prayer, and then we're going to have Ken and Carrie give a brief biography of themselves. And after that, we'll open things up for questions. Oh, didn't you get your dessert yet? All right. We'll do what? Oh, I thought you guys were getting your... How are we going to work the desserts in, my love? Oh, okay, all right, well, we'll do it that way. I thought you'd all had your opportunity, but okay. So I'll open with prayer, and then we'll have you get your desserts, and then we'll, actually, while Ken and Carrie, I'll dismiss tables. We'll do it like that, and then Ken and Carrie can give their biographies during that time. Otherwise, that'll take a long time. So let's open with prayer. Father God, thank you for bringing us together. Thank you, Lord, for Fellowship Church here in Big Rapids and what you're doing here and what you will do here. And we know that it will be a good thing because you are a good God, and we praise you for that. Lord, thank you for bringing Ken and Carrie Krause and their kids here safely and just for the good time we've had so far. And we just pray your blessing on this meeting and the time together. Help us just to show love to each other and understand who you are in each other's lives. This we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So before we have Ken and Carrie go, you guys get to go up to the dessert line first. Okay? And we'll start out, we'll again let you guys decide who gets to go first, but we'll have you each just kind of tell who you are and how you've come to this point in life. It can start with, I was born in...
I'll get my dessert first.
And leave me here.
You want to say?
Sure. You can take the microphone off there too if you wish.
This is where it stops being a living room, is when I'm talking into a microphone. Can you hear me or not? Should I take it off?
No, that's good, actually.
Is it good? Okay. I really didn't prepare this, so if I forget something, raise your hand and ask me. I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, one of six girls. I won't tell you the year, but anyway. Let's see, I grew up in the Ann Arbor Christian Reformed Church for a while, and then we switched to the Christian and Missionary Alliance Church. I went to Hope College in Holland, Michigan. I have a couple people happy about that. That's all right.
I only heard one.
There's a couple more. Oh. They've told me. Anyway, I graduated with an English major early in December of 97, and I went into publishing. I worked in Grand Rapids for 7 years at Baker Publishing Group. Somewhere along the line there, I met Ken, kind of hard to get the chronology right here. We met in about 99, I believe, right? And about 11 months after we met, we got married. Met in a spiritual gifts class at Sunshine Church in Grand Rapids. Let's see here. Then was seminary, and I was still working at Baker. Had our first daughter, Valerie, in 2004. And after my maternity leave, I left Baker full-time, and I went freelance. So now, currently, I'm a proofreader freelance, and that's what I do very part-time from home. So,
tell us a little about your family.
My family. My father was, my parents grew up in Grand Rapids, and then my father went to Calvin, my mother to Hope, and my father did the three-tube program, engineering program at Calvin, which ended him up in Ann Arbor at University of Michigan. We are Michigan fans. That's right. We don't know the outcome of the game. Anybody? Okay, moving along then. So let's see here. So that my parents were going to stay on the southeast side for just a few years, but they stayed there for a very long time, and that's how I grew up there. And six girls in the family. I have four sisters who ended up in special ed, one sister a pediatric occupational therapist, and me. So, doing something a little different.
Your family's still in the southeast Michigan area?
Yes and no. I have one sister left in Ann Arbor. I have a sister in Tennessee, a sister in Wheaton, Illinois, and a sister in Hamilton, Michigan. My parents have moved back to Byron Center, and my oldest sister resides in heaven. So.
Okay, thank you. And your children?
I have three children. Valerie is 5 and a half, nearly 6, in kindergarten this year at Newton Christian in Iowa. Annika is 3 and a half, and Micah is 15 months. Anything else?
Thank you. That's wonderful.
Good evening. Just want to first of all say thank you to the council and search committee for having us out here and for the hospitality and all that's gone in for such a busy weekend where it's been very good, though, in getting a tour and learning more about you. Get a chance to learn more about me and about us, and we get a chance to learn more about you and about your community, too. So it's been a good day so far. I grew up in my younger years in northern Michigan, in Grayling. My parents were divorced at a younger age, and I was sort of put in a position where I had to choose between parents, and chose to live with my dad and stepmother when I was about 12 years old. And that meant moving down to southeast Michigan, near Ann Arbor area. South Lyon was my hometown after that, and that's where I went to high school. And right out of high school, I joined the Navy, and I was in the Navy for 6 years, and I served on board submarines as a missile technician. I repaired and maintained ballistic missiles and their launching systems, computers, and whatnot. But right before I joined the Navy is when I gave my life to Christ. I felt there had to be more to life than just living, dying, and living, eating, sleeping, and then you just die. Gave Jesus a chance. I said, Jesus, if there's anything to you, please show me. And if you're real, my life will change. And if you're not, nothing will change, and life will just go on the way it is. I was an atheist at the time. And from that moment on, the ground didn't open up and swallow me whole. Lightning didn't strike me dead on the spot. But I started going to church and started reading a Bible that my mom had given me when I was really young. And again, my chronology is getting all messed up too, but my mom had died when I was 16 years old. She was 44 years old and died of a heart attack. And so I started reading the Bible that she had given me and started going to church and joined the Navy and started attending a church there. Helped out with a youth group at this Presbyterian church and grew to love the Lord and know Him more deeply through Bible studies, through a Navigator series of memorizing Bible verses and whatnot, and the challenge of being in the Navy as a Christian and defining who I am and who I was at the time. So after the Navy, I wanted to go to a Christian college. And so I looked for colleges in Michigan where I could go to, So I started sending away for information for different colleges, and Hope didn't come up as one of those colleges. But I laid out all of the pamphlets and whatnot. I remember praying over them during my or in my dorm or my barracks. And I had a room to myself at the time, which was pretty unique, but it allowed for some of that private time of prayer. And since the Lord leading me to Calvin College. And thank you. So I ended up in Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, not knowing a soul. And there I was going into computer science after the Navy as my goal at the time. That's where the money was being made. People were graduating and or being hired by Ford and whatnot before they were even graduating, and it sounded like a neat opportunity. And when I got to the college, I went through a process of discernment of what my passions really were, and I was really impassioned about studying God's Word and telling folks about it. So I ended up changing my major to religion and theology in college and went into the pre-seminary tract. And I said, Lord, if I make it through Greek, then okay, I'll continue to feel a call to ministry and head in that direction. And so I passed, ended up passing my Greek classes, and went to Calvin Theological Seminary. And in seminary, I said, Lord, if I pass Hebrew, then I'll keep going. And thankfully, through His grace, He allowed me to pass some of the language courses. But in my last semester of Calvin's, when I got married to Carrie, and we were married for about 5 years before we had our first child. And let's see, after seminary, I went to Newton, Iowa, where I went to my first church and was there for about 4 years. Over this last year, I have been working as a chaplain and studying pastoral care and counseling through a program called Clinical Pastoral Education. That's where I've been for this last year. That program is completed now, seeking the Lord's will and direction for the future right now.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's open it up to the floor. Who wants to go first? Do you guys want some dessert? One thing you learn about our church is there's always plenty of food. I have never seen us run out of food, so there'll be plenty. So why don't you, probably the easiest thing to do is to raise your hand, and Bill's going to work the microphones. We've got two, just talk right into it, it won't hurt you. And again, that way people in the nursery can hear the question, and also people who want to listen to the recorded version later on can hear it. So, anybody want to raise their hand and ask a question? And I'm going to give I've got a whole bunch of questions in case you're feeling stumped. I left it in the room right there, so I'm going to get it real quick.
Hello, I'm Lisa Velker. We have a hospital here in Big Rapids, but the major hospital, if you have something serious, is in Grand Rapids, which is an hour away. And I'm wondering what your thoughts would be, and if you would be willing to make those trips to visit people and to be with them before they have surgery or after surgery, or what is your standard policy, I guess, on hospital and sick visits?
Well, that's certainly a love and a passion of mine. I feel it's very important to be there for members of my congregation in those difficult moments, and very important ministry opportunities for being with people, and sometimes very transitional moments of sickness, surgeries, and praying for them, interceding for the members with them in prayer. As far as the length of travel to Grand Rapids, it was a similar situation when I was in Newton, Iowa, because Des Moines was a good 45 minutes away to the major hospitals in Des Moines. Similar situation, we had a smaller hospital in town, but a number of people would be life-flighted, as they called it there, flown by helicopter to the major hospitals, and I'd have to go into town to make those visits. And I enjoy making those hospital visits. How do I fit that into my day? I work around and value my priorities, and sometimes I include other things that we need to do in Des Moines that are work on a sermon at a coffee shop in the major city or somewhere else. But you work on priorities and determine what if people need to visit, or if a sermon needs to be cut short, or an older sermon needs to be used, because people's immediate needs are a priority.
Check. Question from the congregation. Just raise your hand. Jim?
Working?
That's working, yep.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ken? Yeah. We noticed in what you'd written that you were the appointed chaplain or something or other on your submarine. And obviously this was before you became a minister. How did this come about?
That's a good question. how did it come about that I was the appointed chaplain on the submarine? Well, it wasn't really called a chaplain. It was a Protestant lay leader, which simply meant I led Bible studies and worship services on Sundays while we were out to sea on the ship. Submarines didn't have chaplains because they weren't big enough of a ship to have a chaplain. So I basically took over from one of the other guys who was doing it, and we were a closer, and the Christians were a close-knit bunch on the ship. We hung out very closely together and supported each other, and I was encouraged to continue the ministry, I suppose.
So how long did you sit at the bottom of the ocean? What was the longest time you sat on the bottom of the ocean? Unless that's confidential,
I could tell you, but then you know what happens.
You have to kill me, yeah.
No sitting on the bottom of the ocean, but underwater, submerged, for almost 3 months sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whew, that always gives me the willies. I've heard those stories.
And if there was a hurricane on top, that's where you wanted to be.
Yeah, that's true.
It's under the water.
It's peaceful down there.
Yes.
Who is next? Don't be shy. Or I'll have to use
my after church activities. What are they? Playing with children.
Lunch and nap.
Lunch and nap. Yeah, that's. That's during church. playing with my children, enjoying family life, and also we enjoy hiking, the outdoors. I enjoy camping, biking, that sort of thing, fishing as well. Reading good books, watching good movies, too.
What is your favorite campground and why?
Well, it'd have to be the mountains in Washington. I was stationed out in Washington for 6 years, and just had wonderful, beautiful, great experiences of backpacking up into the mountains. And one interesting experience was with an atheist friend of mine at the time. We were walking up early morning hours. The sun was just rising, and the trees just had moss hanging off the branches. You could, just hanging off, and it was just beautiful. Because you had the fog, the mist of the morning, then you had the sunlight streaming in through the trees. And we reached the top of this hill, and my friend of mine said, you know, Ken, it looks like these trees are just in the perfect spot. It's as if someone just planted them right in the perfect spot. And I said, you know, Justin, I think someone did. He said, oh, shut up, kid. You know, he knew we had that kind of relationship.
Next question from the congregation. Ron Becker. Ann Vermeer's question. What is your feeling on the role of women in the church? Like Sue Loss, the secretary. Yeah.
Just for the record, I am for women in the church. in leadership capacities, I am open to women in leadership capacities in the church.
Any ones in particular you want to mention?
Any particular women?
No, or, leadership capacities.
in all leadership capacities in the church.
Okay.
Yes.
Other question from the congregation? Or I'll have to break out the denominational questions, and it's not as fun. Why the interest in Fellowship Church, and what interaction should we have with Ferris?
Well, on a selfish level, we really enjoy the location. We've been vacationing up here for a few years now at Wolf Lake. It's north of Baldwin, just renting a cottage. We've really enjoyed that that place. And originally, I'm from grew up in northern Michigan too, and we'd like to get closer to our parents as well, and they could enjoy their grandchildren. So on a selfish level like that, the location, we enjoy the location. Other things about the church that draws me here is a sense of seeker sensitivity and a desire for outreach, a desire for connecting with the community more broadly. Because that's part of my heart, too, is reaching out to individuals who do not know Christ, who aren't familiar with the church. That's my background. That's my history as a former atheist and someone who did not know how to read a hymn when he became a Christian. I didn't know you had to skip down to another block after you read the first line of a hymn and just got lost. I know what that's like, and I'll speak more in my sermon tomorrow because the council gave me a topic on Christian hospitality, and I'll talk a little bit about that too. And just knowing what it's like to be a visitor in the church and being stranger to the church, having not grown up in the church. So my heart goes out there, and also my heart goes out for those who are lost, those who do not know Christ as their Lord and Savior. And so I see some of that desire here in what's been told and what's been written. The connection with the university is exciting. My hope and desire would be that that connection would be strengthened and we could do more with that and more individuals could be involved in that sort of ministry. Did I get all the questions?
Thank you. We're letting Carrie off the hook. Carrie, what do you like about being a pastor's wife and what do you find difficult or frustrating about being a pastor's wife?
Well, one thing I noticed when we went to Newton was that everybody wanted to talk to me. That sounds a little egotistical, but that was a privilege that people wanted to get to know me, that I had an easy in to build relationships within the church. And I am a relational person. We enjoy doing things with people, hanging out with people. I enjoy getting to know people so I can meet their needs and be whatever God calls me to be in their lives. And I found it to be a huge privilege that people were willing to go the first step and wanted to get to know me. Then I didn't have to break through that wall of trying to break into circles or whatnot. I had a little edge into getting into people's lives and having a chance to get to know them and find out where I could fit, what I could do. So I find that to be a great privilege as a pastor's wife. If people will let me in, I'd like to go in, that sort of a thing. Let's see. I'm sure there's more, but again, I need some time to think about that, I'm sure. This is spontaneous, right?
Yes.
So frustrations.
What time does he get home from work?
You know, we had it pretty good. in Newton. Ken was good about prioritizing his time, and we even had lunch together nearly every day, which was great. So that would not be a frustration. I'm trying to think off the cuff here. Sometimes I think that maybe even the flip side of what I just said is that people only let you in so far, too, especially if they know, if they're not comfortable getting too vulnerable. And I think it was slightly frustrating to me to see that it was harder for my husband to make relationships and make friendships than it was for me, because he's the pastor, after all. And we had some good superficial, we have good relationships, but some of those in-depth things, people still kept a guard up, and that's slightly frustrating. We're people, too. We're normal people, too. So.
And he's a guy, too, so it's just, you know, one of those things. My wife and I have had this conversation often.
Excuse,
you don't seem to get into people's lives. I'm like, am I supposed to? All right, anybody else? Oh, my wife has a brand new upright freezer for her birthday. Oh, yeah. Even the people at the appliance center said, wow, you're a real romantic, aren't you?
I thought you were going to say vacuum cleaner.
They said that was almost that bad. It wasn't that bad, but almost. We didn't need a vacuum cleaner. And some biking gloves. Yeah, her birthday is Wednesday, so you can wish Felice a happy birthday Wednesday. Other questions for the Krauses?
You were speaking that you have a heart for people that don't know Christ. When you prepare a message for Sunday morning, who would you say you target? Like, the children, or people that don't believe, or mature Christians, or do you try to hit everybody?
Yes. They're all in my mind. And there's no one format of the non-Christian or the new Christian. And when I think about myself, as a newer Christian, I wanted to go deeper. I wanted to know more. I wanted answers. I wanted to know what the Bible said on a deep level. You know, I wanted the deeper theology. And where everyone else was saying, no, we need to dumb this down. We need to make it simple so people would understand who are outside the church. And as one who came from outside the church, I didn't want that. I was learning. I was growing. And I wanted to know more. So there's no one level of that non-Christian or new Christian who comes to the church. But I do understand the point about being careful with the language and using too much technical theological language from the pulpit. What I told the council was simply, you know, being able to teach people through, walk people through the scriptures and teaching what those scriptures mean. And I always have in my heart of how does this apply to our everyday life? How do we, you know, what do we take home? What do we learn from this, and how are we going to grow spiritually, either individually or corporately as a body, or how does this apply to how we live in the world or take the gospel to the world?
Another question from the congregation.
Sometimes I use illustrations or objects as well, as far as bringing in people who are more tactile learners. One time I broke a pot on the pulpit and with a big hammer, and you know, simple things like that that might bring the point home.
How big was your church in Iowa that you pastored, your first church?
It was 140 members, about.
Can you tell us about the transition away from that church? Like, why the transition away to do CPE? Because that's been a year now?
Yes, just over a year.
Kind of walk through that transition away from that last congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why the transition? One of the things was that I felt myself doing too much of the sermon preparation and too much time in the office, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted more of the one-on-one connection with folks in the church, and also be able to be more involved in outreach. And so I entered into this pastoral training, pastoral care and counseling training, with a desire for that one-to-one, being able to walk with people on deeper level spiritually one-to-one. And so that was part of the draw to going into that training. The transition itself, I think, went fairly well. We didn't leave on bad terms or anything. It was that sense of where God was calling me. And I continue to preach there once a month, one Sunday a month. And we still live in the parsonage, actually. It's like we haven't left. We continue to attend. Until recently, I've been doing pulpit supply every weekend, so I haven't been there in a while. But
still our church family,
and they're very supportive in what we're doing.
Other questions?
Well, my name is Brandon Siever. When you spoke about outreach, I was curious to know what experiences and projects maybe you've led within the church in Iowa that were focusing on community outreach.
One of the things that I did first right away in a few months of becoming a pastor was street preaching. We had the bike riders, the great bike ride across Iowa, come through our town, and they travel across the state from one end to the other, and they were spending the night in our town. It was a huge deal. And so our church put together a stage that would be set up downtown, and I got up and did an evangelistic message, and they had a band that played continually as well during this time, and we had groups of folks that handed out free water and bananas. Apparently, bananas are good food for bike riders. But everywhere else in town, you had to pay for these things, but we were offering it for free as an example of grace, of the gospel. And I was a part of that and in leading that evangelistic message. I remember going online and looking at street preaching and what I had to be aware of, and it started talking about what to do when people throw things at you. I realized I don't need to research things as much anymore. But what our church also did was hold block parties once a year in our church parking lot, where we had some carnival-type games and whatnot, and it just showed the community we had fun, but we also offered free food to whoever would come, and it really drew out a lot of people from our community, who, our neighborhood, who came out to that block party. And we had some people that stuck around and became members because of that block party. I think we've gone door to door for handing out flyers. Vacation Bible School is a really big deal. We had a house the church bought or had owned and turned it into a ministry house for needy families who would use it. And at one time, we had prisoners who would come from the local prison who would use it. Alpha was we had Alpha and a convert from Alpha. And actually, we took Alpha program. I don't know if you're familiar with Alpha. Not very familiar here. It's an introductory program for folks who are either new to the faith or interested, inquiring about Christianity. And it's a video series, and where you'd have a meal and you invite folks to this this study. We had it in our church for a while, and then we had a group of guys who took it to the prison and had it. At the prison, we started out with 13 guys and ended up with, at one point, more than 100 guys. They had to get the gym and a bigger facility because of that. Guys were really interested in both learning about the basics of Christianity, but also having these guys that love them enough to actually come to the prison on a weekly basis and sit down in small groups and have a conversation with them. Those are a number of the activities I've been involved in.
Other questions? I'll ask one. So what types of music do you both listen to on your own time?
If only. I feel like I don't have enough time for it.
Mother of three children, no time to listen to music. Barney and VeggieTales. Yeah. If you were able to listen to music and your children were happy and well cared for by your husband, of course.
A big if.
Or grandma.
It's something I'd like to explore. I have kind of eclectic tastes. So down in Grand Rapids, I used to like to listen to WYCE. I don't know if anybody knows what that is. It's very... their line. It's eclectic. Certainly Christian radio, to some degree. I'm kind of picky. I don't like anything too schmaltzy. So I have eclectic taste. Let's just leave it at that. We enjoy we have a local vineyard and winery in Newton, a couple, and they'll have bands out there, and we enjoy sitting out on the lawn there and listening to bands. Whatever comes up, it's always fun to me. So,
Pastor Ken.
I often listen to contemporary Christian music, but I also, the dark side of me listens to rock and roll, and more of maybe the heavier rock and roll too. I enjoy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. What's the last concert you went to?
The last concert I went to,
mm-hmm.
It's probably the Trans-Siberian Orchestra when they came to town. Yeah. And that was that a birthday present or Christmas? Christmas present that Carrie gave me.
Are there... I didn't catch that.
It wasn't a freezer.
It's not a freezer, no. It's a very great music, actually. I have not gone, but I've heard it's phenomenal. Other questions? Books you've read, or that you would read, or like to read?
Besides the Bible, yes, I do read other books besides the Bible. some of the Christian authors I really enjoy and have enjoyed over the years have been C.S. Lewis, N.T. Wright, Neil Planinga. Other books I like are action-adventure type books, and, well, usually true-to-life biographies or true-to-life stories. Like one recently I read called Escape from the Deep, and it's about a submarine. I haven't read a book about submarines in a long time, so I picked one up from the library, and it ended up being an excellent book by Alex Kershaw, talking about the escape of a submarine crew in World War II, who happened to be the first crew to actually escape from a submarine and then get captured by the Japanese, and... but I enjoyed that kind of reading as well. And right now I'm reading books on leadership. Edwin Friedman, Failure of Nerve, Leadership in the Age of the Quick Fix, is a book I just read this summer. Another one is True North that I'm just about to finish, written by Bill George, about finding your authentic leadership.
Same question for Carrie.
Oh, if only, once again.
VeggieTales. Barney.
Since I proofread, my free time is often spent proofreading, and I don't really feel like picking up a book. But on the trip, I grabbed an Anne Lamott book that I wanted to check out. Don Miller, C.S. Lewis. I'll do anything. Leif Anger, that's a good piece, Like a River. Yeah.
Okay, good. Other questions?
Some pastors choose topics that they preach on, like a series or perhaps a book of the Bible for several weeks or that type of thing. Do you have that type of sermon preparation, or do you plan sermons a long time in advance? What's your stand on that?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I would say often I have a sermon series of one kind or another going, and I like to mix it up, whether it be a topical series on if it's family life or on prayer. And the ones I really enjoy are the book series, where I go through a book and preach from important chapters throughout the book, and I'm teaching the whole the meaning and the history behind a passage or behind a book. And how that applies to our life. But yeah, I do plan sermon series in advance. And a book of the Bible, yes.
Yeah. I
preach from the Bible.
How do you involve children in the worship service? Do you do children's messages, children's choirs, things like that? How would you like to involve children?
Yeah, our last church we didn't have too much of that. We did some of that. I would invite children to a lead prayer sometimes that were very, very meaningful. I think to hear the child's voice. I think it's possible to include children in more ways too, the youth as well, and have in mind, and whether teenagers. And it could be from collecting the offering or their worship and praise bands, and or even leading a portion of the liturgy in prayer. And so,
in an ideal world, you know, your perfect church world, how much of the service would be led or have direct involvement of the congregational members versus direct involvement or leadership by you?
It's not something you can really quantify, but that I can really quantify. But in an ideal world, I'd say there would be always some participation of congregation members, and it wouldn't just be the pastor every Sunday doing the whole service. But that worship would be participatory.
Other questions?
I'm interested in adult education, the Sunday school, that type of thing. What's been your experience out there in Newton? What have they been studying? What do you think has done lots of interest? And the best topic?
Oh, sure. Some of the adult studies that have taken place and been interesting. Well, we've led small groups at our house, and one was using Lee Strobel's material, A Case for Faith. And it was a DVD series where you'd watch a piece of the DVD and have a discussion about the topic and looking up Bible verses. Another material that we've used has been Philip Yancey's material. What was it called? Jesus I Never Knew. That was very, very good too, I thought. And in a small group setting where we've did the study, but also took time to pray for one another, pray for each other, and share our concerns and what's going on in life. Sunday school, yeah. They're the adult Sunday school. They're using a Ray Vanderlaan series, again a video or DVD series that would play and study the material. Has been very good and helpful and interesting to a lot of adults. I would like to see, and my vision is also using adult Sunday school to help train, to equip. Since I see as a pastor, my job is equipping people for ministry. To see adult Sunday school as training leaders, let's say in small group leaders, and how to become effective small group leaders, or training Sunday school teachers, or you know, in churches we don't get a lot of training in different areas. We ask people to step in and do it. We don't give them some helpful hints or suggestions or expectations and training and how to do it. And I think that would be very helpful.
Other questions?
You mentioned earlier that you were doing some reading on leadership. I wondered, to what extent do you think that a pastor ought to provide leadership to his congregation, and to what extent ought he to take to take leadership? I'm not saying this right. To what extent ought he to give direction to them, and to what extent ought he to take direction from them? Does that make sense?
Leadership as a pastor is an interesting role. I do not see myself as the CEO of a corporation, who in a hierarchical way hands down the orders and rules and lets the and let the people follow the orders type of a person. That's more of a military role or model for leadership. My leadership administrative style is more of a consensus building style, and bringing people on board with the program. And also, it's important to know when to step back as a pastor as you equip people to lead and to allow others and empower others to lead. And that's some of the things I've been studying. One of the books that I have that I'm ready, I want to read is a book by the former president for Starbucks, and he talks about how to empower others to lead. And I think it's very important for a pastor to do that, not only just to get a buy-in from the congregation for programs, but to empower others to do ministry and to realize it's not just the pastor who does ministry in the church, but every member is the church, and as a pastor, I'm here to equip the members.
Actually, there's one really good denominational question here for both of you again. How do you maintain your spiritual, emotional, and physical health?
I get to start first. Spiritually, I have been involved actually in a Bible study at another church. We don't have, our church doesn't have a lot going on. And we do have a Bible study right now that I'm a part of at our church. But I have also taken the opportunity to do Bible study with other women aside from our own church members. And that helps because these are weekly, it happens to be Beth Moore studies, if you're familiar with Beth Moore. Keeps me in the Word as a busy mother, wife. It's nice to have that accountability, something I have to do every day. So that's a good way to maintain my spiritual health as well as my personal devotion and the time I spend with my husband, too. Physical, we walk, we hike, we chase children. We do a little Jillian Michaels. I do, I should say. What was the other?
Emotional.
Oh. I suppose that comes mostly in relationships, having people that I can talk with, my family, but also people, friendships within the church, people I can talk to, who I can be honest with and open with, and then also the same with my husband.
Thank you. Ken?
Yeah, for me, maintaining spiritual health and prayer, devotions on a regular basis, reading scripture, reading scripture in a meditative way too. Like over this last year, I've been reading the book of Daniel very closely and meditatively, and it's been very powerful to do that. Physical health, as far as exercise, like I said, walking and sometimes lifting weights, and maybe I'll break into a run every once in a while, but. And knowing my limitations and taking a rest and sleeping when I'm supposed to sleep and knowing myself well in that regard. Maintaining friendships, mentor friendship in the denomination, Jim Peterson, been a very good friend of mine, and having other friends with which to talk to and vent with and process life with has been important for me.
I might add that we had what we called the PCRC, which was the Pastoral Church Relations Committee, and two couples that we invited to come into our home, and they were it was a confidential, it was kind of like a small group where none of them were currently on council, but they had been on council, they understood. We chose people who had been in the church for a while and understood the pulse of the church, and then people who also related well with us. And they became our confidants, our cheerleaders, our supporters, and that was very effective for us. Somebody we could talk to about anything, and it would stay right there. And they were also our liaison. They were for us, and they represented us to our congregation, too, and that was a very important group for us.
Yeah, that's a great model, and one we've tried to do, sort of. But yeah. Other questions?
I'm Rowena with Deep Voice. She's asking a question. How involved have you been in community affairs?
How involved in community affairs? I've been a part of the Ministerial Association in Newton, which was pretty active, and that was a very good support for me professionally and personally. Newton CRC was the only Christian Reformed church in town, but I got to know the other pastors in town really well. In fact, I became president of the Ministerial Association, and we did community services together, crop walk, and a number of different programs. And we kept in touch, especially regarding helping the transients and those who would call or come to our churches looking for help. As pastors, we would always email each other if someone got or decided to help one person. And so we didn't have the situation where the same person would just go around and hit all the churches in town. We had a network as well with Salvation Army in town, and that was a really good network and community involvement in that regard. Other ways, Newton went through a huge transition when Maytag was bought out by Whirlpool and left the city. And right before that happened, or right after that happened, the city leaders decided to get together and have a community forum and revisioning time period. We got together to discuss a vision for the city, and I was a part of that and participated in that, and in follow-up meetings as well, as we broke up into different areas of creating a new vision for the city that didn't include the one major corporation. Maybe other ways.
Red Cross.
Oh, yes, I'm involved in Red Cross volunteer for disaster action team leader. And I get calls sometimes at night to go to a house fire and help provide assistance to someone.
Other questions?
This is your third visit here. Have you felt the Spirit leading you towards us? And, you know, the way things worked out to get to know us better, and we've got to know you better. But and what if the Spirit has led you to us, in what ways is that?
Yeah. I think I certainly feel the Spirit moving, and some of the ways has been that my profile's been out there, and I've been talking to other churches. Have not gone as far as this over the last 6 months with another church. No other church has really interested me as much. And these are ways that I believe the Spirit leads as well. Fellowship has continued to be on my mind and heart. I believe I contacted Sue way back when, before the search committee really had a profile together or something. I don't remember, but and she said, "Well, we'll pass your profile on." And I just thought, "Well, this is going to take another year before the search committee gets together and decides what they want to do." So I've been really impressed with how quickly they've been moving. So yeah, I've continued to feel drawn this way in the Spirit.
I'm just curious, with the proximity of Calvin Seminary, do you have plans to take additional classes and further studies? Is that in your immediate goals, or do you have long-term goals for specific classes that you'd like to study more?
Oh, specifically, not yet, but it does excite me to be close enough to have that sort of continuing ed so close. Whereas out in Iowa, it would cost a lot of money and take a lot of time in order to travel and to be somewhere for continuing ed. So it excites me to be so close to a number of different opportunities for continuing ed. Yeah. I definitely always have that in my mind, as how to improve and grow in my skills and knowledge.
I don't know if anybody's asked about music yet, specifically how you feel about what kinds of music are part of the worship, and I know you said about the hymns, and I don't know, the value of teaching, keeping on with hymns to you. I mean, as a new Christian, you have maybe a different view of it than I, who grew up with it, so I just wanted to see what you feel about the music as part of worship.
Okay, music and worship, yes. I enjoy a good blend of the different styles of music, from contemporary to traditional. I think it's very important to teach our young people, and not so young people, the value and the theology in classic Christian hymns and hymnody, but also very much enjoy contemporary praise worship music as well. I feel uplifted by both.
How have your experiences in the Navy affected your role as a pastor? Yeah, are we going to be ground zero here?
No. That's a very good question. I think I've been exposed to quite a bit in the Navy, exposed to a very rough group of folks coming from very rough backgrounds. You know, for some pastors, it might scare them to hear swear words every once in a while, but it almost doesn't faze me sometimes because I've been exposed to it and been around it. Doesn't mean that I use them and whatnot and continue to curse, but I think I can relate to folks who are from a rougher, harsher background and who work in more industrial environments too. Through that, I think I understand men too, and this is something I've been looking at over this last year, and how men grieve or don't grieve, and who hold it in. Years and years go by, and a trauma has happened, or a death, and they had to be tough, and had to be strong, because culture says so, and that means never crying, and never showing emotion, that was part of my growing up, and I've seen it as part of a lot of other men, especially in the Navy, and over time, that really eats away at a person's soul. So I think that's helped me understand, let me see, as a pastor, to encourage full humanity in people, and especially men, too, being fully human in their emotional life as well.
How involved will you be with the youth, particularly the adolescents?
Mm-hmm. It's very important that youth, I think, get to see their pastor and get to know them, and that their pastor takes interest in their life and what's going on in their life. In the past, I've led, recently, led catechism class, and that was part of the class, is getting to know them and to find out what's going on, to be have some kind of relationship with them. I've also gone on mission trips with them, and I really enjoy doing that, serving together, working together. I've gone to Philadelphia and Florida. You went with me, didn't you, and to Florida on that mission trip. And being together in relationship, I think, is very important for the youth, and I can see myself in that regard, but do not have a strong desire to be the youth leader of the church.
Other questions?
What does the word discipleship mean to you?
The word discipleship, first of all, means to me, means walking with Jesus. And it means learning and growing. Growing through what Jesus has said and how he lived, and becoming more Christ-like throughout our lives.
So, Carrie, how long is Ken's average sermon in minutes?
This is the make it or break it question.
We'll give you the big one.
good question. Maybe 21 minutes? I'm not sure. 22?
21 or 22 minutes, okay?
It can't be less than, I believe it can't be less than.
Yeah, we'll follow it up. How long is his pastoral prayer? That's another good question.
It's not cookie cutter, so therefore it's not the same length every week. We'll say that much. How's that?
Okay, good. Other questions? Let's see, I should break out one of these denominational ones here.
Do we get to ask questions, too?
Yeah, please do.
Anyone from out of state and came here to Big Rapids, and what kept you here, what keeps you here? What brought you here, what keeps you here?
Victor, our international person.
Well, I guess I'm originally from Canada. But I went to Calvin, so.
All right.
And I met my lovely wife, and I guess we're not from the Big Rapids area. We met at Calvin, but it was my job that brought us up here. So I work for the Sheriff's Department. I got a job as a police officer up here, so that's what moved. I had never been to Big Rapids before until I came for a job interview, so now I know this community probably better than anybody else here, but but that's what brought us here.
And I would have to say I did not want to come here. Victor brought me kicking and screaming to Big Rapids. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, just nice big city. Grand Rapids was even small for me, so I did not want to come here. And I came to fellowship and just felt welcome the second I walked in the door. And now I can't even imagine leaving. I love it here. It's a great place to raise your kids. I couldn't even think about leaving.
I don't know if we'll do you next. Ken and Carrie had 2 hours of tour, probably, today.
I don't remember.
They're about just curious.
We're going in circles for so long. I just
Mike had them going in circles. Make it look bigger than it really is.
Yeah.
You just keep taking a different way, you know. What were your impressions as you rode through our town?
Beautiful.
It was very beautiful. Beautiful day.
Picked a good day for it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I think your questions almost should be in reverse. I mean, is anybody here actually born? I think just about everybody from around here is from somewhere else. It's not like an Iowa farming community where people live in your town.
That's a unique role.
I mean, I can't see anybody around here. Not just around here.
Greg will have to tell his perspective on that.
Joe?
Yep. Joe's out on the combine. Greg was born across the street where he lives, and you own a funeral plot up the hill from where you live. Cemetery plot, yeah. Yep. So Greg's officially, he's very local. Yeah, Stanwood, actually. If your spouse is from New Era, you are going to a Christian Reformed church yet. Yeah, you go to Calvin here.
The former minister here, Ed Visser, one thing that I liked about the church right away and that during his time here was the kind of like the scholarly aspect to his ministry. He was very interested in the Jewish history of Jesus and sharing that kind of history, kind of like along a Ray Vanderlaan type of realm. So I found that very interesting. And I also found the congregation here very caring, very cordial, very inviting. Being here in the community, we moved up here when Lindsay got a teaching job. And then I got a teaching job, so we kind of started to set the roots down. It's been wonderful living here. Hopefully, you know, I guess God knows the future, but whether or not how long we'll be here, but we don't anticipate leaving anytime soon. So, I don't know if that kind of answers Mike's question, unless Lindsay wants to publicly scold me.
I share a lot of the same sentiments. I think that it's a church. It's a CRC church. It's where the word is preached. You know, in a way that, well, I grew up with. You know, I've been raised with those doctrines and appreciate them. And, the word is preached in that way here, and it has been. And I'm sure it will continue to be. The style of worship it's been a nice blend. You know, it still has some of those same traditions that, you know, are kind of a constant, but it also is willing to grow and change. As far as the city, the parks and the trail system is just wonderful to have around. It's a great place to raise a family. It's big enough that it has some opportunities. It's not real rural. You don't have to drive for 30 miles to get groceries. But it's also small enough that crime, you know, isn't a real significant factor. And, you know, the traffic's not a real significant factor. So it's a nice medium-sized place with good parks and good trails. And, we've been really happy here so far. And it is a really good place to raise a family.
We came here 4 years ago after, we talked at lunch, but after seminary and going to a Reformed seminary, this was the closest thing that there was. And so, coming through the door the first time, we tried a few of the other churches that we were encouraged to try around town, and not big fans of anonymity when you're part of a church family, and so we wanted to be at a place where we would walk in the door and be known, and people would know us, and we would know people, and so we've kind of found that here, and it's been a blessing.
Do you guys have other questions?
Ooh, a list.
Cheap,
all right.
Well, I wonder what makes for a good pastor to you, and that might be different for each one here, but if anyone's willing to speak up about that, what would make for a good pastor here in this church?
Yeah, 5 to 10 people, one thing. So how many tables we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, count, you guys in the back, 9. 9 things. Each table's got to come up with something that you want out of a pastor. Dee will go first. She'll speak for the back. Dee wants us to matter to you. What happens to our congregational members and congregation matters to the pastor.
And related to that and what... Brandon said about growth and spiritual growth and making it scholarly enough to help people grow, because we have a lot of educators here who are smart and the rest of us are trying to be smarter. So, you know, just someone who cares about our spiritual growth.
This table.
I guess I would answer or say that I would be looking for the word to be preached, someone who would preach the word faithfully, and that the sermons come from the Bible, from passages that you would choose in the Bible. I guess that I didn't clear it with the rest of the members at my table here, but all right, they agree.
Back table, one thing. You're the back table. Here we go. Good. Thanks, Ron. Table over here with the bashes. Rowena, Mary.
I think we decided, or it was me.
You're on.
Okay. That we'd like to see a pastor who would really enjoy being part of the community and would get involved like you have been, you've talked about. So I think we're good with that.
Matt and Craig, you're holding down the whole table over there, so you got to come up with something.
I guess I would say that I'm most concerned about lost people.
Okay, reaching the lost. Good. In the center here, Mom and Jerry and Tim. Tim, the only college student here.
Matt was here earlier. I'd like to say something a little bit on what Mr. Vanderplug had said, you know, something from the Word. But even more than that, I've heard a lot of pastors pick a topic and then find something in support of, which is good. But when you pick something, you know, pick a topic and then find scripture that barely supports, or when I listen to your sermon, I'm like, wait, how does that relate? Like, and those I've been really disappointed in, and I don't expect to see or hear that, rather, but, you know, something that can easily flow through and, you know, easily correlate is huge to me. So.
Okay, Ben and the Lobdells. Last table. Oh, did I? Oh, don't worry. Go ahead.
It's often, but I say I think there's a lot of truth to it too. That a sermon, a preacher ought to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. So to provide support and care for those who need it, but also to challenge those who might have grown comfortable or complacent.
Those of y'all know I'm a huge supporter of community outreach. I lead the GEMS program, so I love to reach out into the community, and that's what I'm hoping that a minister will support, community outreach. It's a passion of mine.
Anybody else have something that didn't get mentioned? Keel. Encouragement to use our spiritual gifts and developments of spiritual gifts. Anybody else? Something they would like to see in our new pastor? Let's go another 5 minutes. We'll go till 7:30, and that'll give a little time just to kind of mix and meet the Krauses. Oh, let's see. Another question. Oh, I'm sorry. Please, yes, continue. Yeah, if your list goes till midnight, we're good.
How about?
Yeah.
Yep. Any funny stories or happenings that you could share with us? Church-wide community funny stories or something that happened in church? Or does the community here ever have any fun? And what kind of fun do you have together?
Greg Warwick, Crown.
Yes.
Amateur.
Oh, okay. Some of them are true.
Smidgen of truth, and then you build from there.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know of any fishing story that doesn't begin with a little bit of truth.
Other questions for us?
I don't think I have any more.
All right. Other questions? We camp, yes. We have a yearly camp out. That's very well attended. That's kind of a sparsely attended church service, I understand. I've been at all the campouts, so I've not been here during the... I'm not sure what happens when we leave, but yeah. It'd be nice to have you come. You guys enjoy camping,
mm-hmm.
So it'd be great to have you come. Ludington State Park next year.
I wouldn't have to stay here and lead the service?
No. We'll get you pulpit supply. I might impose on you to do the devotional on Sunday, though, because that's always a challenge to get somebody to do that. We'll have a tug of war.
I do know for a fact that Pastor Ken is human and his wife because they broke the law already here in Big Rapids.
Uh-oh, what did they do breaking the law? And remember, there's a sheriff deputy here. And Ferris, I don't know. There may be a little bit of law enforcement here, yeah. Yep, there he is. Two police officers. What did they do to break the law?
Way past Kentucky Fried Chicken. So I called again
And I said to the lady, you know, I'm standing at the stoplight. Well, sir, you have to move up forward because there's a sensor. And I said, I can't move up forward. There's traffic ahead of me. And I said, there's people that are beginning to make U-turns. And this could be a potentially hazardous thing, you know. So please send a cruiser. Well, about that time, after I hung up, some of the traffic, just people ahead of us got brave and started going through the red light.